The Supreme Court takes aim at a gun regulation. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. The justices have overturned a federal ban on bump stocks, devices attached to guns that were used in the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history.
Bump stocks do not meet the legal threshold of a machine gun, and therefore a majority of justices say the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives wrongly banned the accessory. The ATF implemented the ban following a mass shooting at a Las Vegas music festival in 2017 that killed 60 people. After more than 1,000 rounds were fired in 11 minutes, a gun shop owner in Texas challenged the ban.
That's Fox's Jared Halpern. It's one of several cases we're still waiting for decisions on. Fox's David Spun reports from outside the Supreme Court.
We did not get the big immunity ruling, which would describe President Trump, former President Trump's fate as far as it comes to him potentially going to trial here in Washington, D.C. for his alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 election.
And today is the former president's birthday. He's 78. President Biden's in Italy, where he'll meet soon with Pope Francis, who just became the first pope ever to address a G7 summit, warning world leaders there of the dangers of artificial intelligence.
It's up to each to make good use of it, and it's up to politics to create the conditions whereby this good use is possible and fruitful.
Ukraine, also a big focus of the G7 summit. Russian leader Vladimir Putin says he will stop the war if Ukraine gives up trying to join NATO and if Ukraine pulls troops out of certain areas. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin rejects that.
Putin has illegally occupied sovereign Ukrainian territory.
Demolition work began this morning to tear down the building at the high school in Parkland, Florida. It was the scene of a 2018 mass shooting that left 17 students and adults dead. America's listening to Fox News.
For years, I was living in constant pain. There were days I couldn't move my hands. I couldn't paint. I couldn't write. Honestly, it was so bad, I had a hard time even doing work. I tried to tough it out and just grin and bear it until Tanya finally, after we went to the Mayo Clinic, we went everywhere. And Tanya had heard about Relief Factor on the Blaze, and she said, why don't you try that? She kind of pretty much made me try it, and it was amazing. It's been a miracle. Relief Factor is 100% drug-free. It's a daily supplement that helps your body fight pain naturally, and it was developed by doctors. It uses a unique formula of natural ingredients that addresses the inflammation where the pain starts, and Relief Factor doesn't just mask pain. It helps reduce or even eliminate it all day, every day. So if everyday pain is affecting your life, don't go with mind over matter. Try Relief Factor. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. Save on your first order. It's 1-800-4-RELIEF. Fight pain naturally with Relief.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACUMA.com studios. 560 KBLU.
It's going to be a hot Father's Day weekend. The peak heat on Saturday, so make your plans accordingly. Morning hours are definitely more comfortable than later in the day. 111 the high this afternoon. Overnight lows dropping into the upper 70s. Tomorrow, sunny and breezy. 112 will be as warm as we get. And then just slightly cooler Sunday, 108 the high. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Miriam Ordóñez. Two men were formally charged Thursday in the murder of a 19-year-old man from Yuma. 23-year-old Cody Meyer originally told Yuma police he was cleaning his shotgun Monday afternoon when it accidentally went off and killed Raymond Ruiz. But the other suspect, 19-year-old Angel Campa, turned himself in later that night, saying he was the one who recklessly handled the rifle that shot Ruiz before running away. Both men were appointed defense attorneys. Campa is being held on a $1 million cash bond, while Meyer has a $50,000 cash bond. Both men are set to appear back in court on June 21st. The victim's family has set up a GoFundMe where his sister described them as having a unique way of touching the lives of everyone he met, leaving a legacy of friendship and love that will endure forever. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Tom Rush here with Money Talk. George Davis, my partner, Yuma Investment Group. Good morning, George.
Morning, Tom. George Davis Sr. here. Russ, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man.
Yeah? Congratulations to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Married now. If you didn't, listeners didn't know, it's pretty awesome.
I think you get ding tax-wise if you get married. You should have stayed single.
I don't care.
I think it's actually advantageous.
It should be.
It didn't used to be. Unless I think I don't know if they changed.
Depends on your income level and how much to combine.
Advantageous to have one electric bill, right, for two people, and not two electric bills for two people.
It's best advantageous if we have one electric bill and she pays it. That's the way to. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get accomplished here.
Yeah. So yesterday I was at my Rotary Club meeting at the Civic Center, Fort Yuma Rotary. We gave $34,000 away to the local nonprofits. There was a handful of them, and that was some of the money we raised throughout the year. But anyways, kudos to the Fort Yuma Club.
How much?
$34,000.
Oh, that's impressive. Yeah.
But I was walking out around 1 o'clock from the Civic Center, and it was like 102, 103 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
This weather is kind of weird, huh? I mean, it's not as hot as it should be.
Yeah, it was 113 earlier in the week, but I thought May was pretty nice.
Yeah, but you get big swings when you go from 113 down to 102.
Yeah,
102. But anyways,
it was tolerable.
Yeah.
So Sunday's Father's Day, Tom.
What's that?
Big day on Sunday, Father's Day. So I don't know if you got any plans for it or what's going on. I'm a pretty simple guy. We're not doing anything much going out of town. Maybe go hit Lutz or something. Give a shout out to Lutz and do that for Dad's Day, but.
Okay.
It's a lot of pops out there. Happy Father's Day early to everybody, and hope you have a great Father's Day and spend time with your family. That's what it's all about. Russ, you spend time with your...
Yeah, I got one daughter living in town, but my son's coming down this month.
Ah, nice.
I don't know what day. I think it's not going to be by this weekend. It'll be a little after.
Okay.
Nice. I haven't seen him in a while. You know, he's been traveling the world.
Yeah, that's good. Excellent.
So did you say you were leaving town?
No, we're sticking around here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So before we jump into our topic, I just want to give another rehash on where the market's at. So we passed the six-month mark, and as of June 10th, the Dow was up about 3.8%. So Dow are large companies, value companies.
Mm-hmm.
The S&P was up 12.8, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ was up 13.3. So the S&P 500 and NASDAQ are geared more towards growth. And that's the struggle that we have over time. Some years value stocks do really well. Some years growth stocks do well. A lot of people like to try to gravitate to one or the other, or they see the growth stocks doing well, so they want to go more to growth. And then eventually the value stocks start doing well, so they want to go more to value.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a believer that you really should have about a foot on each side. Straddle the fence line and put some in growth, some in value, so that way every year you're going to have one of the winners.
Yeah,
it's hard to chase it.
And one of the strategies also, Tom, is that we're using is, since value hasn't been keeping up with growth, I wouldn't call it really beaten up, but I was a little surprised to see that, you know, 3.5% when the Dow is hitting records. But if you're putting money to work and your dollar cost average in, make sure you're buying into either small cap value or large value companies so that you're getting in at a good price. Because then if you're buying, you want to buy into growth also, but don't forget about those values, especially where they are right now price-wise.
Well, the interesting thing is the S&P Small Cap 600 Value Index, which are small companies, value means I'm making money, is down 4.48. So the small caps are getting, you know, not doing as well.
Yeah, they're more interest rate sensitive.
But mark my words, come the next 5 years, we'll be like, we should have all the money in small caps because they will bounce back around. And they've kind of underperformed in general the last 5 years. The five-year average is about 8.2% for the S&P Small Cap 600 Value, and the S&P's up 15%. So that's quite a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So then the international market's starting to spark up. You know, for the longest time, the last 10 years, the U.S. market has done quite a bit better. A lot of people kind of have given up on international because, you know, it just hasn't done much. But
yeah, and the war's going on and everything.
Yeah, some of these indices are up 10.6%, the world index, 7.72. So things are starting to come back with international. The other area that's really disappointing has been the bond market. So across the board, the bond market year to date as of June 10th, they're all negative. Not a lot. Like the U.S. Treasury intermediates down negative 0.43. Ginnie Mae 30 years down 1.48. U.S. aggregate bond funds down negative 1.2. The only thing, the only one that's up is corporate high yields are up 2.06, but the bond market's experiencing another probably negative year so far. Mm-hmm. So, anyways.
Well, the bond market's had a pretty tough go at it. Last year it was positive, but in 22, was that the year it was down the 13?
The worst year since the Civil War.
Yeah.
So, just go there to show that these markets do fluctuate in and out of sectors.
Uh-huh.
So you got to...
The Fed came out with their little meeting and talk a couple of days ago, and they're keeping interest rates the same level. They didn't decide to cut them or anything.
Well, they kept talking about that.
Yeah. I think there's still a shot that the inflation numbers are coming down a little bit, which is good, especially the housing, because that's a significant of people's money. And the oil, gas is coming down, if you haven't noticed the gas prices.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't surprise if there's a cut sometime this year.
I don't think there'll be a cut before the elections. Maybe December.
I bet you by December 31st we have one cut.
I said.
I think you both agree.
I said.
He usually bets me on those.
I'll tell you there won't be a cut before the elections. How about that one for lunch?
November. Okay, yeah. What the heck?
Okay.
Uh-oh.
I'll take that bet. So,
you got that one, Russ? I got it. All witnessed. Right, I wrote it down.
So as far as some of the things we want to talk about today, one of the main things is just the impact of Social Security. And Social Security is, if you put money into the system, you will get money out of the system. So we get a bunch of newsletters and things, and they actually have one of the newsletters says the 24 of the most frequent questions asked by people about Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to kind of run through these, and the ones that look more interesting we can go through. The ones that aren't, we won't. So I'll let you lead the way, George.
All right, Tom. Thanks. So as you know, I got my National Social Security Advisor certificate earlier this year. So I like to geek out on this Social Security. And it's a big proponent of people's planning. We have it in our financial planning software, Money Guide Pro. But people tend to overlook, think maybe Social Security is simple choices. But some of the...
And you're actually giving seminars on Social Security, so now you're...
Yeah,
giving seminars. That must mean you're an expert now.
I am. Just like you say, Tom, I like what you say about, if there's, you don't know everything. You're not going to know every answer, but I do know where to find the answer. So a lot of times I'll rely on, resources and people like this gal here that does this letter. Call me or send me back the answer for every individual question I ask. It's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, in our business, I hate to use the term, but plagiarism's the best way to go because we're not sitting 8 hours a day as analysts or trying to figure out stuff. So you're better off subscribing to people that are smart, getting their newsletters, mm-hmm. listening, reading, reports from other people. So, it's how it is.
Well, every individual's different, too.
So, when you were in high school and grade school, plagiarism was a no-no. You had to come up with your own ideas and that.
Uh-huh.
Well, now we're in the real world. I mean, pretty much that's all we're doing is reading other people's ideas.
Especially with AI now.
And learning from other people.
AI can do the plagiarizing for you now. And everybody's like, well, you're just going to be copying there. AI is doing the paper for you, like if you're in college. So.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because even like Russ, he just got married and he was kidding around about the electric bill and she owns a house and all these great things. But now
was he kidding though? I think he's serious.
Now the Social Security for him changes entirely because there's two people involved. Yeah.
Well, because of taxes, you mean?
Well,
just the
taxes,
household choices change.
Choices change because you're still waiting. You were planning on waiting until you're 70, right?
Right.
Well, after you're married for, I think it's 9 months, 9 months or 12, then
it's 9 months.
You kick the bucket at 70.
Yeah.
She can hop onto your Social Security at 70, and you waited to maximize yours out.
And she'll benefit.
Well,
see, I love her, so it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right.
And people take it early because they think that the system's going to be broke, and we'll dive into this after the break.
I've got an article on that, too.
But that, well, this is the first question that came up, so let's hit
it. But anyway, to answer your question, because you were waiting until you're 70, you get an 8% increase every year from 66 to then. Yeah. You know, me and Tom can't guarantee an 8% return, so that's a big deal.
What's I got one to put you on the spot. What's the age difference? Is she older, younger?
She's slightly older.
Okay. So that would also...
That's about the same age.
So that would also work, too, in 9 months if something happened to her. If you're, your Social Security is not as much as you... As your own, you can jump to hers. So it works both ways, is my point.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, let's take our first break here, Russ. And as soon as we get back, we'll dive into these Social Security questions. The first one with Social Security going broke. So stay in there.
You got it. We'll be right back.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to Yuma Money Talk, AM560 KBLU. George Davis Sr. with my partner Tom Rush here. Russ Clark, of course.
Good morning.
Father's Day weekend. Hope everybody has a great time out there. So we're talking a little bit about Social Security, and got a newsletter here, and we're going to go through it and discuss. Basically, like Tom said, it's pretty hard to believe that we're already halfway through the year. But this through the mid-year, most frequently asked questions that we get from clients and other advisors that deal with Social Security and the concerns they have. The first one is, on a lot of people's minds, because I hear it a lot, is going broke. Is the system going broke, and therefore should I take Social Security as soon as possible so I'm protected to keep my benefits if they through 2033, because they think that they say that all the calculations that 2033 that the system will be in big trouble. Now, going broke means that you're not going to have Social Security go to zero. That will never happen. There's no such a thing, because you always have people putting money into the system.
So when they talk about going broke, that was a trust fund that was set up a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the trust fund had, you know, $3 trillion of excess funding. So the trust fund, if they don't change things, they project it's going to run out around 2033. And that was when they say go broke. They're talking about this trust fund.
The trust
fund,
yeah. More people will be drawing on it than is coming in.
Yeah, and the money that's in there will be gone.
Yeah.
So basically what they're saying is if they don't change things, they think you'll be getting about 79% of the money on your Social Security then today.
Correct.
Because money comes in, there's not enough in there, so they're going to prorate out on the backside, mm-hmm. so about 79%. So that means if you make $2,000 a month, it could go down to about $1,600.
It could go to $1,600, yeah.
Which is a big deal, because that extra $400 might be the electric bill, might be, you know, something crucial.
It might be like food.
Yeah, it might be food.
Yeah, that could be.
So that's a big deal.
And the other big deal is if you – go ahead, Tom.
Well, so the funny thing about fixing Social Security is it would take one or two moves to fix it, like and simple moves. So that's why I think they keep putting it off, because they know that if they make one or two adjustments, it's going to be funded. Let me give you just one example. So right now, you get taxed on Social Security. I believe it's like $170,000. I don't know if it's in there, George.
$168,000.
Your tax. Mm-hmm. You make more than that, you don't have to pay Social Security tax on it. So even if they just changed the rules and said, you know, if you make unlimited amount of money, it's all Social Security tax. So someone who, some of these NBA players that make $20 million a year, I mean, it's going to be a big hit. So that was simple ways to fix this.
Yeah.
That's where I think the can keeps getting kicked down the road, because if they tweak two or three things, it's fixed. But no one wants to face the music.
Is Social Security really attacked? I thought it was supposed to be, you know, whatever you put in, that's what calculates your return. So if they raise it to $20 million,
yeah,
then his Social Security is not going to be a $4,000 check. It's going to be a $40,000, $50,000 check.
Well, that's assuming they don't cap it. But what they're talking about doing now, because like I said, there's different ways they can tweak it. I've heard one of the things that they were talking about in Congress was basically if you make so much income, you don't get 100% anyways. So you might only get 60%.
That's not the way it was originally designed.
No. So who knows how they're going to make the rules work out, but you're right. If you put in $20,000 of income, you might get a $40,000 Social Security check, but it wouldn't surprise me if they cap it somewhere along the line.
Yeah, they will. Because one of the popular ones they're talking about, you're talking about on the tax, is up to $168,800 you pay tax on Social Security.
Right.
Well, then you don't. So no one puts into it, Oprah, LeBron James. So what they talk about doing is after that $168,000 to help protect, you know, middle America, you don't have to pay anything until you're now making $400,000. So if you make $400,000 and above, now you're on that ladder where you're actually taxed again, but you're not getting an extra benefit when you retire. So it's kind of a bummer, but that's, you know, hitting the rich, of course, that make over $400,000.
Is it really put the into rich? The system. I mean, if you live in a big city like, you know, L.A. or New York and you're college educated, for a household to make $400,000, maybe it's a lot, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, but, you know, $400,000 is not going as far as where you think, especially with living in the urban cities. So, yeah. I don't know. Like, that idea, that seems pretty low, $400,000.
Yeah, that's one that they're throwing around. But that way they're not taxing just above the 168.
So if you're worried about Social Security not being there, then if you ever do a financial plan, you can just plug in the lesser amount.
Yeah. You could do a reduction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just plan for it if you think that's going to be a problem.
And one thing also, Tom, to touch on is when people think that Social Security is not going to be there, you know, like you said, it's going to be having the issues in 2033, they'll grab it early at 62. So you take a 32% cut on Social Security. So you're getting, instead of waiting for full retirement age, let's say you're getting 32% less. Now,
I think you got it switched around. So if you take it at 62, it's a 25% haircut.
Depends on your full retirement age.
To regular retirement age, it is 25%.
Okay.
But then if you wait from your regular retirement age to age 70, that's 8% a year. So 4 years, that's 32.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm switched around, George.
Okay, Tom, thank you for the clarification. My point being is that's a reduced benefit. The 25% for life.
Yeah.
So every time you get a COLA or cost of living adjustment, you're going to have less of
compounding
interest. Also, let's say they actually do cut and you only get 79%. Like they can't fix it and you only get 79% of what you were going to get. You took it early, so now you're getting 79% of that smaller dollar amount instead of full
retirement. So instead of 100, you're getting 75, now you're getting 79% of 75.
Yeah, so now you're getting like 58% of what you would have got.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a lot of the times, the only reason it makes sense to take it early is if you truly can't put food on the table and every penny counts, or if you think you have a big health element where you think you might not live that long. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the two areas that you really should think about taking.
Well, people have asked me that. They said, look, you know, you're putting off to 70, but what if you die at 69? I said, I won't know. It won't hurt my feelings.
Won't care, right?
I won't care. I won't know.
Yeah. Well, you're also doing what you enjoy, Russ.
Exactly,
you're still working.
Right.
You still got some income. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that's a good choice. Let me ask you these other ones real quick, Tom, and see what you think. So how about, because here's some ways that this guy recommended to fix it. Increasing the OASDI tax base, because you as a business owner, you pay 6.2% of wages into Social Security, and they're talking about bumping that up to like 7.
I mean, that's taking it to the small business owner who creates jobs, so I don't know if I like that one.
So that's one. Increase the labor force participation rate. Get more workers paying into Social Security.
Because some of them can opt out, or they're 1099 or something?
Could be, yeah. I'm not sure what they mean there, but he says get more people putting into it because it sounds like some workers aren't doing it.
Maybe, yeah. Well, I mean, that might help.
Yeah.
But, you know, make it even for everybody in the sense, you know.
Mm-hmm. Another one is make 100% of Social Security benefits subject to federal income tax.
Hmm.
Right now it's up to a certain dollar amount, it's 50%, then 85%.
So that's going to really hit the poor people.
Yeah, that one would hit everyone instead of just hitting upper.
Because that's, if you make, I think if your joint household and you make like 42 or 45,000 under that, you don't pay any Social Security. Zero.
Well, 50% of Social Security is taxable.
Even
but there is a 0-1. It's more like 32.
No, I think maybe single, but married, it's kind of a little higher.
But
so.
You're right. There is a zero threshold.
Yeah, that will pinch that. So I don't know if that's fair, but
okay.
Stick it to the people that need it the most.
Okay. How about this one for the future, Tom? Delaying full retirement age. Right now it's 67 for me. My son's 45 years younger than I am, and his is also 67.
Yeah, good luck.
I don't know. I mean, you know, they force you to work longer. So I don't know if I'm a fan of that.
Really? Yeah, I'm actually a fan of that one. I mean, right now, the younger generation can plan if they have to wait till 68 for full retirement age or 69. Plus, you know, they're living. When Social Security first came out.
Yeah, I mean, if you maybe delay it by months, but not like,
When Social Security first came out, the average life expectancy now, you and I, is 16 years older than when it first came out. That's how much people are living
longer.
So maybe
what they should do then is index it to the life expectancy. So let's just say 20 years from now, you know, we extend life, it gets extended by another 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can index it to that, I'm for that.
Because
that truly will affect if you can live longer, then you don't need to collect as soon.
See, that just goes to show, Tom, that people, you know, like you and I, we can talk about this stuff and come up with great solutions. I don't understand why they delay so much and they don't plan ahead.
I know we got other questions here.
Frustrated.
But let's keep going.
Let's do it. Delaying early retirement. So you can't take it at 62. You have to wait until like 64, for example.
Yeah.
There's another one.
I'm talking about our new questions, though.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was it for me there.
Okay.
Just letting you,
let's go to the next topic,
some of
George.
The ideas there.
but they're just ideas, and we have no control on them. Congress would decide.
Yeah, but I think they're kind of interesting. So. Yeah.
So let's talk about the spousal benefits, because that's where people get confused. So that's what I think you were mentioned by Russ getting married. Now there's spousal benefits. So things change. So,
well, this question's about, this one is about spousal benefits. So here's the scenario. Suppose a couple, if you have a couple and either the man or the woman stays home and is taking care of the kids and really has little or no work history, when the working spouse files for Social Security, does the dependent spouse collect half or 50% of the amount of the working spouse's Social Security system or benefit? So, for example, let's say a wife files at 62. Can the non-working husband receive half of her age 62 Social Security benefit?
I think the answer is no, but you're the expert. Tell me, George.
So let's say this gal, she has full retirement age.
But let's give an example. So say that was one working spouse.
Yep.
The other one takes care of the kids, and it's a big family, five kids.
Yep.
So they don't get a lot of money put into Social Security.
They're not putting into the system, so they really either have no record or a minimal record.
That's the scenario you're talking about.
That's the scenario.
Got to paint the picture, George.
All right, so the picture is I'm at home with the kids. My wife's working hard. She's got a pretty good full retirement. I want to know if I'm entitled to half.
Right?
That's right. Yeah. So, all right, in this example, her full retirement age is 67.
Yep.
And she's going to get $3,400 a month, okay?
Yep.
Her spouse stayed home. He can collect 50% of her $3,400, so he gets $1,700 a month.
But only at her full retirement age.
Correct.
Not at 62.
No.
So I was right, because you told me, can he take it at 62?
I would say Tom's right.
Yeah.
Okay, can I finish?
Sure.
I started with full retirement age of 67, okay?
Okay. So
the trigger to James' ability to receive the benefit is that Janet must claim her benefit.
Yeah.
So if she's a lot younger and he's like, I want to get on it and get half of hers, he can't until she actually does it. If she does it age 62.
But she has to be above a certain age. She can't take it. Right?
Is that,
okay.
If she says, I want to collect it at 62, instead of that 3,400, she's only going to get 2,380 because she's getting a reduced benefit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He can jump on it, and he can jump on it, and he still gets 1,700 a month, her full retirement age benefit. Not nuts. That's pretty dang.
But here's where I think you're not letting the listeners know. Who if someone's going to take a benefit from a spouse, there's a minimum age they got to be. What's that minimum age? It's 62.
62.
Okay, yeah.
See, don't worry about the minimum age. If your spouse says, I'm taking it, you're entitled to get half.
Yeah. But if I'm 58 years old and I can't take it, you can't do a spousal benefit. So you can't think about these until the spouse is 62. Doesn't
Correct.
Work.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because these are all good theories, but if it doesn't work for somebody who's not 62 or older,
yeah, you got to be able to claim your benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, there's more. Okay, so let's give a hypothetical. Let's just say a 60 full retirement age, this is called 65. 62 is the spouse. She takes a spousal benefit, it's about half as less. What happens? Keep the train going. Then what happens? Like, is there a certain point where she gets off the spousal benefit?
What's the question?
Well, what happens after she takes a spousal benefit?
He can jump on, and he gets half of what her benefit is. He's going to get half of what she's taking.
But at what age? No benefit. 66 for him or 65?
It doesn't really matter.
Hey, this is like the old who's on first, no, who's on second.
All right, let me read you the example, okay? So she takes it at 67 because that's her full retirement age. Okay. This is the easy part.
Okay.
Because this one is a tricky one. She gets $3,400 a month, all right? So she took it. James doesn't say anything about his age. He gets $1,700, half of what she's getting. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So James must, let's assume she collects at 62 instead. Now she's getting $2,380. Despite her early claim, his maximum spousal benefit is still $1,700 if he does it at 67. So if he waits till 67, he can still get her $1,700, not half of her age 62.
Okay.
But if he did take it immediately younger, then he only gets half of what she was getting.
But in this example, would she take the spousal benefit forever? Like it just goes on, or is there
a
triggering event at some point?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No.
Because the reason being is because his half is higher than what was put in. So she would take, if what she put in was more money, then she would opt to take hers. But since it's not, she can take half of the spouse.
Yes.
Because I thought at full retirement age, they can then say, okay, what is mine? And they can opt to either keep the spousal benefit or they can flip back to theirs, you know?
Yeah, they can do that too. But he's not going to ever have a higher benefit.
Yeah, okay. So I guess.
But let's say she passes away.
Listen, we're doing this on purpose for the listeners to show you that there's more to Social Security than meets the eye. And you really should need to sit down and look at someone's individual circumstance to try to get the best maximization of it.
Right.
And not just for one person, but as a household.
Because
you'd be amazed at how many times we talk to spouses about, well, we need to take Social Security. And they're like, well, I don't know. It's up, you know, they can take it whenever they want, but the spouses never work together.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, if the husband wants to take it whenever, it's up to him. I take mine whenever it's up to me. So they're treating it as like two separate decisions when it should be one decision for both people to maximize it.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yeah, makes sense. Total sense. Because in our scenario that we're talking about, he's on.
Hey, Russ Clark just yawned. I think we're boring him.
Well, that's because
I'm newly married, so I'm trying to put the house on. I'm not sleeping.
He's trying to figure out how to maximize his new spouse. Hey, what's your wife's name now?
He's Helen.
Helen's benefit, so he can be like.
I think what's happening is he has a honey-do list every day, and he's getting tired. Comes to work a little tired. He has a honey-do list that he has to crank out every day.
Might be.
Hey, we're going to take another
break. He does look a little worn out.
We'll take another break here. This is Money Talk, 5-6 a.m.
Wealth Management. They manage money for their clients differently from many other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from many other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk, another good Friday in Yuma. I think we're not getting beat down too bad by the heat. I'm sure July is going to be a little bit more brutal, but we're talking about Social Security, some of the basic questions that most people ask. We're going through them. George just got back from his bathroom break. How you doing, George?
I feel a little better, Tom. Thanks, thanks for asking.
Hey,
yeah, I'm getting up there, too. I'll be 59 next month, so I got these decisions coming up on Social Security, but everything's still working, so that's good.
Yeah. How's that prostate, George?
They don't call me George Davis Sr. for nothing.
So anyways.
Hey, we're up. Let's talk about it. Continue on here. We'll hear a little bit more about Social Security. Go ahead.
But we're done with the spousal benefits. The point is that there's opportunity on both sides. You need to understand them, and you probably need to sit down with somebody. That's my advice.
Yeah, and you're right, Tom. The one thing that we do see, especially in the Social Security industry, is, and I hate to say it, but I mean, people just either ignorant or don't really know, you know, what questions to ask, but they don't think about, hey, how's my choice going to benefit the spouse? You know, you should be working with the spouse and see how you're going to maximize not only yours, but if you're the breadwinner and you die, don't forget your spouse, as long as you're married.
Yeah,
you know, that 12 months, you can jump onto the other one.
There's a combination of choices, and people spend about 4 seconds deciding on how they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand the full combo. So.
Or like our first thing, they're afraid that it's not just going to be broke or something's going to happen, so they take it at 62 and just say, all right, I'm taking it as early as I can.
Or the biggest thing we hear is, hey, my brother-in-law took it at 62, and he's a really smart guy, so I'm going to follow his lead. I hear that a lot, actually.
I do, too.
They didn't mention someone's name, and, oh, he's a smart guy. He's taking it, so
and he was
I guess
asking,
I'm going to take it.
He was asking, hey, it's going broke and this that. It's not going to be there. You better grab it now.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
It's true,
thing.
Though. They listen to, you know, whoever they influence them. So let's go to the next question.
Here's our next scenario, Tom. Let's see if this one's a little bit easier. That was a tricky one. My former spouse is collecting Social Security disability. My former spouse. So this one is a divorced spouse one. Can I collect disability benefits under his record? I was married to him for over 10 years, and I'm 61 years old.
So you look at me like I should give you an answer?
Well, I'm just wondering. So can she claim she's been married over 10 years?
This
is a disability one, though. He's disabled, and she wants to know if she can claim under his disability record because she was married for over 10 years.
And I think the answer would be no, because he's disabled, she's not disabled.
There you go. Nice job.
Because if not, you might disable your spouse on purpose so you can collect. Right, Russ?
Yes.
You know,
disable yourself.
Yeah, that jar or something might drop out of a cupboard. Pretty strategic to disable somebody.
I'm a newlywed. We're still on the honeymoon. There's no jars dropping.
Okay. This is funnier than I thought it was going to be. A disability benefit can be claimed only if the claimant is deemed disabled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So which makes sense.
You can't claim a disability under your prior spouse's record, even though you meet the 10-year requirement.
Sure. So let's talk about the 10-year requirement, because I don't think people get it. If you've been married for longer than 10 years, you divorce, and if you do that multiple times, 10 years, divorce, 10 years, divorce, then you have access to your ex-spouse numbers. And sometimes it's... All of them. So if you have like one guy and three divorce exes that live, 10 years and one day, then those three exes can all claim on the husband,
the ex-husband. Oh,
okay. So yeah, it's kind of weird, but
I thought I could claim for four Social Securities.
No. But the reason why that's a big deal is because we come across people that are married. So they take the Social Security based on the arrangement with their marriage. Yeah. And then when the spouse will pass away, they don't think, I was married to some guy 40 years ago for 10 years. And they just think they're going to continue to take the spouse.
And he was making big money.
If he ended up making big money. And the good thing is they don't contact that other person. The other person doesn't even know. And if it's 40 years ago, you thought, the guy was kind of a loser, but maybe he was a loser that moved to Silicon Valley and got on with Google or something
in the governor of North Dakota.
In the 90s, yeah. So that's the thing, is you got to, that's a window of opportunity.
Yeah.
And I've actually had a spouse who said, looked into that, and the ex-spouse from a long, long time ago was like an extra $600 a month.
Mm-hmm. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal, really big deal, yeah. So,
but you're right. You could have three ex-spouses taking off of your Social Security. If I was married three times, longer than 10 years each one, it doesn't matter if I get remarried or not, because that's not their fault.
Yeah.
There would be three exes my Social Security.
Yeah. But you'd never know.
I wouldn't know. It wouldn't affect me.
Yeah, they don't even let you know. So that might be a rule change to help sustain Social Security is stop those loopholes.
Yeah.
That's you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. That's a big one.
So the other thing they have is if you marry someone, you have to wait 9 months before you can actually have access to Social Security if they pass away. And the reason why they do that is they don't want to wait, have someone on their deathbed, and then you get a friend of a family and be like, well, let's just get married so you can keep half my Social Security when I'm gone or something. Wow. So they basically have a timeline. Is it 9 months or is it a little longer?
For the marriage?
Yeah.
9 months.
Nine months, that's it. But that's still that's still pretty short term, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you knew you were terminal with cancer, 9 months, people can stretch out through 9 months.
Said, yeah, don't pull the plug.
They should up that. They should make it like 3 years or something. That's a change.
Well, they do the 9 months because if they're on their deathbed, they figure, But here's the other kicker. Let's say you do get married, Tom, and you're, I don't know, a week later, you die in a freak car accident.
Okay.
They'll look at that and realize that was a freak accident, so they will qualify. It's not just 9 months rigid. It's
they got flexibility. They can
Like an accidental death. That's obviously you got married and then someone they died. They'll still actually honor it.
If they can prove it was accidental, then I think it gets waived.
Yeah, the 9 months is really so someone's not laying in their deathbed in there. Well, here you go, and I wanted you to have my Social Security. So, but you're right, 9 months. You can hang on for 9 months, man. Put the old face mask on, and all right. Let's go on to the next one, Tom. So this one's on a divorce spouse benefit, which is a little bit different, a little tricky. So last November, I divorced my second spouse. I was collecting spousal benefits, which I thought could continue post-divorce. So she thought she could continue to do it. But after the divorce was final, I received a letter saying I was no longer entitled to those benefits.
Wow.
Here's what happened. She was married for 9.5 years, and now I'm told I needed to be married 10 years for my payments to continue.
See, that's good to know.
Should have held out.
Yeah. That's what it says right here. Can you confirm that this is really accurate? Am I out of luck? Unfortunately, yes. after the rules are rules. If after the 10-year milestone, had your marriage lasted 10 years, your benefit would continue. Sadly, it's a missed yet crucial aspect of negotiations with divorces that people don't think about.
Yeah, and the divorce attorneys should know that too, right? Because they're giving advice.
Yeah,
if I came to a divorce attorney and said, hey, I'm thinking about getting divorced, how long have you been married? You know, 9 years, 8 months? Well, listen, just hang on 4 more months, and here's why.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. So,
yeah.
All right, so here's the next one. Suppose a retired worker's reached full retirement age but decided to wait until age 70.
Yeah.
Here's Russ. However, the spouse has been a caregiver and little or no income from Social Security. Should the couple consider having the earning spouse file sooner so the dependent can access a spousal benefit?
My answer would be yes. But he would have to claim first.
Yeah, he's got to claim first.
But then he can claim an unclaimed, right? Can you unclaim
now? No, not anymore.
They not anymore? Okay.
That was that file now and later thing.
Yeah.
That's a good
question. So you'd want to run the numbers then. If he claimed and she got half, then maybe it's worthwhile, maybe it's not.
Yeah.
So, the old days, like 5 years ago, the spouse could claim so the other one could get the spouse benefit. Then they could immediately unclaim. So now they're back to letting
when
it grow.
70. Yeah,
but they did away with that.
That was a sweet deal. That was one of the ones they got rid of because it was too good.
Yeah.
Too much of a drain on the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in this case, that's interesting. You'd have to, this would be an individual situation instead of just blanketly waiting until 70 to maximize benefit. But if the spouse already has her own or his own benefit because they were working, then you'd have to look at that too. But this is let's say the spouse doesn't really have much income. And they want to hop on to that spousal benefit like we talked about and start earlier at 67 and get half of their money for 3 years as a head start.
Hmm.
Make sense, Russ?
Yep.
All right. We're up against our last break here, Russ, and then we'll come back and continue.
Money Talk. Be right back.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
How about the benefit?
Hey, you guys are on.
Yuma, this is Money Talk. We're here having fun, laughing, but another great Friday. We're talking about Social Security, different questions or answers that can happen. I know George has given Social Security seminars every quarter or so. So we'll be announcing the next one. Is it in August or when?
July.
July, okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll get that out one of our next shows, but education only. I tell everybody, knowledge is power. Whether it's your financial knowledge or any other type of knowledge, educate yourself. You'd be amazed at how you can end up with a different solution if you understand it better.
Yeah, they're fun too. We have a good time. So it's the 18th, July 18, which is a Thursday, and July 20. This is a Saturday.
So we have a Thursday afternoon.
Thursday afternoon, 6 o'clock.
And then a Saturday mid-morning.
10 o'clock on the 20th, yeah.
Yep. So if you're interested, we can get you on the RSVP list. So call our office, 928-329-1700. Okay, let's keep going on this. What's our next one?
Well, the other one you touched on, Tom, already, which was I heard that more than one ex-spouse and current spouse, I don't know if we talked about that, can simultaneously claim on one working spouse's record. If a person's married three times, each more than 10 years, and now is on spouse number four for the last 2 years, can all three and the current spouse?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, don't forget about the one that's currently on, you know, that they're currently married to. If they have a spousal benefit and they want to take half, they can.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting. All right, this one's on.
So that's a situation where being divorced a lot is, it could be a good thing. Right?
Could be a good thing for the ex-spouses. You have to work
pros and cons. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of cons of that, but that's the pro.
And make sure you hang on there for that 10 years, too. Don't get a divorce at 9 years and 8 months.
Sure.
So this other one was the earnings limit. You want to do that one?
How about the this one about the 55-year-old who wants to retire early? The benefits estimates? That seems kind of interesting, huh?
Oh, okay. I plan to retire at the end of the year, 55, and plan to file for Social Security benefits at age 67. How accurate will they be if I retire 12 years before my benefit starts?
So it'd be really accurate. That you only can get 40 years of funding?
35.
35, okay. Mm-hmm. So basically, to maximize your Social Security, you want to have 35 years of working. So let's just say you have 31 years. Well, you get goose eggs for those other years you didn't work. So the formula has a little bit of effect on it.
Yeah.
So if you want to maximize Social Security, one of them is to try to get the and they only take the 35 years that have been the most pay. So let's just say you work part time towards the end when you retire, you don't make much money. That won't matter as much. Mm-hmm. They take the 35 highest paid years.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, and the other interesting thing, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up. So this basic question, this guy's saying, look, I'm 55, maybe federal employee or whatever. I want to retire, but I'm looking at my Social Security statement, SocialSecurity.gov, which I recommend everybody go to, sign up for. They do a good job of estimating what you're going to get at every age and your income limit and taxes, all that. But he's wondering, how accurate is the Social Security if I retire at 55 and it says I'm going to wait till 67? Is that what I expect to get? And the answer is no, because the system expects you to work until your retirement age.
So it's showing you a false projection?
It's showing you a false projection. It's showing you make too much because it doesn't know you're retiring at 55 and you're not going to have any more income to put into that 35-year interval.
Can you go to the system and just let them know, hey, these are going to be goose egg, and then give you a real number?
Well,
you just have to wait it out.
You have to wait it out because it catches on after a couple years.
Oh.
But there is a calculator. That's a good point because in here it says there is a calculator.
We have access to that too, right?
Yeah, they'll calculate the new estimate, and you can download the results. So I apologize. So you go to Social Security account, and you do plan for retirement, and you can do your future benefit on no earnings.
Yeah.
And it'll kick out there for you.
I see.
Yeah. All right, this one I didn't know about. This one's pretty good. So does it make sense to work past age 70, though working will not increase my Social Security retirement benefit? So would you ever tell anyone to wait past 70 to collect?
You would lose. No. 100% no.
Yeah.
Excellent. And if you say you work past 70 and you work 70 in 1 month, that 1 month where you should have gotten Social Security, you never get it back, right?
No, you don't.
Yeah. So if you worked, but we had one guy come in. He was actually 71. He goes, well, I don't need the money, so I just leave it in there because I know it's growing. And the answer is he lost 12 months of Social Security and would never get it back.
Right.
So you always take it at 70.
Make sure you take it at 70 because there is no benefit for being higher. All right. Well, how about this one now? Because with the SECURE Act, they did away with that. 70 and a half age. Where
sure, now it's
put
73.
Into your IRA.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can still work
and
contribute.
So, in qualified accounts, you can, as long as you're working, you don't have to do a minimum distribution. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I think it was 70 and a half. They didn't let you put into it and deduct into an IRA.
Okay.
Or a 401k if you were still working above
your
RMD age. Yeah, you're right. So, 70 and a half or 73. But anyway, so this one, is it possible that ongoing work can increase your benefits? Let's say I'm 70 and I want to continue to work. and I take Social Security at 70.
Yeah.
But I keep working. What about me working?
And adding higher and
adding
pay.
Higher, yeah. What if I start replacing some of those older years with a higher wage? Is that going to help me with Social Security?
I would say no, but I could be wrong here.
You're wrong.
Okay.
Oh, man.
See, yeah.
Write that down, George.
So it's a moving animal then.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought maybe...
Each additional year you work, it'll prompt Social Security Administration to recalculate your benefit.
Wow.
Now, if you have 35 years in and you're working and it's less than all the 35 years, then there's no effect.
There's no effect.
I was kind of right.
Yeah, you were. There you go, Todd. Hey,
so I like about this. You're right and wrong at the same time.
Darn it.
Oh, man, scratch that off. So the most recent year you're working might replace one of the highest 35 years of earnings in the compilation.
Now, check this out.
But it's kind of interesting that you still would, most likely, 35 years ago, you're probably making more.
But let me this is another thing that's unusual. So say I'm working in the 70s, 1970s, and I make 40 grand, which maybe in the 70s is probably pretty good money.
Yeah.
Well, that 40,000 a day is nothing compared to 40,000 a day. So they actually will index that number. So when they calculate the 35 top years, mm-hmm. it might include my 40,000 from 1970, because when you index that, it's a higher number.
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat. That's, I mean, they don't just take the flat income level, they index it to inflation.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, because back about 30, 40 years ago, they call it 30
Yeah, 40
years
grand
ago.
In the 70s is probably pretty good money, right, Russ? I think that's what you were making in the 70s?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
No, but I'm in all sincerity. Like 40 grand in the '70s is probably decent pay, right? 40,000.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
no, more like 15,000.
Yeah. So
they stopped collecting Social Security after 15,000. Now it's 160,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember still getting bigger paychecks at the end of the year, and I'm like, well, why am I not paying Social Security? I didn't know why.
Yeah.
They stopped deducting it.
Yeah. So what else we got, Mr. Social Security?
Let's see here. I was looking for one that was kind of interesting. How about taxes? Everybody loves taxes.
Sure.
So I turned 73, and that generated required minimum distribution.
Yep.
So I got to take my IRA distribution after age 73.
Mm-hmm. You're forced to do it by the federal government. If you don't take it, that's a 25% penalty. Big penalty.
That's right. There's a big penalty.
Used to be 50.
Yep.
So, but that's still 25% is serious money.
It is serious money. So now it's up to 73, and if everyone, the listeners, want to know, if you have an IRA that's pre-tax money, you're required to take so much out. It's like a calculation the IRS does.
Right. Yeah.
Could be a lot of money if people have a
pretty
substantial
IRA. I mean, on average,
it's about
4%, give or take, the first year.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
So that needs to be included in your planning, because now that goes on as income. So in this scenario, they turned 73, they had to take a required distribution,
mm-hmm,
and a portion
income.
Of their Social Security became taxable that wasn't before.
Yeah, so if you go over the threshold, Social Security is taxable.
Yeah.
And it does go up, too.
So they owed more in federal income tax than they expected, and the advisor suggested withholding voluntarily from Social Security benefits, and they want to know if they're required to do that. But the federal income tax withholding on Social Security is not required. So you have to do it yourself. Let's say... You know, you're taking this RMD and you're not used to paying the taxes on your Social Security. Plus, you got to be careful with Medicare. Because if you reach a certain threshold on income, as you know, that Medicare Part Medigap or Medicare Part D has a higher premium. So there's a lot of things to look at when you start taking these RMDs and you reach certain ages.
So. George, you got like 30 seconds, man.
Oh, yes. That was a great show. Happy Father's Day, Tom, Russ, everyone out there. Have a good time with your family. Sunday, don't forget Dad's Day. Get him some great presents.
Yep, I'll be quick here. So everyone has a money problem. Either you got too much money, what to do with it, or you got too little money. So
No perfect scenario.
So guys need help, call Yuma Investment Group, 928-329-1700. Be happy to see what you got going on. Thanks.
My.
The opinions voiced in Money Talk with Tom Rush and George Davis Wealth are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Money Talk are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through
this
CWM
is News
LLC
Talk 560
and SEC KBLU, registered investment
Yuma.
Advisor.